Hi there, it's me, Duncan, and I wanted to thank you for pushing your earbuds into that wax palace you call your ear. I wrote a song for you.
Blow your nose into my mouth when I'm sleeping. Blow your nose into my mouth, my love. Oh, use my mouth as a Kleenex. Blow your nose into my mouth while I'm sleeping. The city sleeps so gently. The kitty curls up sweetly. And into my mouth you're blowing your nose. Into my mouth you're blowing your nose.
And we're back. Hi, guys. Thank you. I find this to be kind of intimate. It used to be tough to get used to. I don't know if you've ever been inside of an earbud before, but it's pretty interesting to look out from the little slit in the earbud out into the inner ear of my listener, you. You don't realize this, but there's a lot of hair down here. And when you're as small as I am, you can see things. Beautiful things. It's not as bad as you think. Yeah, they're creatures in the forest of your ears, pubic hair. But they're lovely, soft, velvety, delicate, and full of a kind of sleepy vigor. I'm going to take a little nap here in your ear, and we're going to cut to a commercial. This is the Duncan Trussell family.
Hey.
A tremendous thank you to Amazon Music for supporting this episode of the DTFH. You want to hear Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer on loop for the entirety of the Christmas season? No problem. Just say to your Alexa, Alexa, play Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. And it will play. And it will play it again and again and again. Amazon Music, it's incredible. You can have access to over 70 million songs on demand and ad-free. You can play the songs when you want, free, for 3 months. Hey, Alexa, play Les Miserables. I'm just hoping some of you have an Alexa nearby. Hey, Alexa, play the soundtrack to Jesus Christ Superstar. You can play Mariah on repeat long into 2021 if that's your jam. Hey, Alexa, play Mariah Carey, every song, forever, and it'll just play. If you want to stream free, Amazon Music's got you covered. Download the app to get access to millions of podcasts, including the great DTFH, at no charge, plus thousands of music stations and top playlists. You can listen at home or wherever you are. Your holidays will be merrier with fun, festive tunes. Remember, for a limited time, new subscribers can get 3 months of Amazon Music Unlimited for free. Go to amazon.com/trussell. That's amazon.com/trussell, T-R-U-S-S-E-L-L, to get your first 3 months of Amazon Music free. Starts at $7.99 a month after. New subscribers only. Terms apply. This offer expires January 11th, 2021. Thank you, Amazon. My dears, don't forget to join our Patreon over at patreon.com/DTFH. Unify, link, commune with your family, the DTFH family, and join us for our book club, our weekly meditation, or our Friday family gathering. I would love to see you there. Friends, the following episode is a true psychedelic. It's not toad venom, it's not MEO-DMT or DMT, but it's definitely a mind blaster. Today's guest, Connor Habib, has a wonderful podcast called Against Everything with Connor Abebe. He also has a thriving Patreon community. All the links you need to find it will be at DuncanTrussell.com. So now, everybody, unsheath yourselves from the world of matter and send rays of divine data to today's guest, Connor Abebe. Connor, welcome back to the DTFH, my friend. I've been trying to visualize where you live, and I wonder if you could describe it to us so that we can fully understand your reality.
Okay. So I live in Dublin. It's very calm here and quiet here. I mean, sometimes Dublin can be a really loudy, boozy city, but it's been calm all year, and I've been appreciating the quietude of that. I live on the end of a dead-end street, and, you know, Ireland, everybody's pretty friendly to each other. They're pretty neighborly. We do have our sort of weird problems, but it's like, it's warm here, you know, like, places, this is not uncommon. Like, I have a fireplace in my house.
Nice.
You know, and it just feels cozy. It gets dark in the winter, so we're recording this in mid-November, so it gets dark like around 4 o'clock, which nobody tells you about. Oh. It's like fucking Iceland, and they just don't know that. Oh. You don't know that before you move here. They don't tell you that. And that's really disorienting and make you really sleepy. But besides that, it's pretty calm. Existence. I read and I write and I do spiritual work and, you know, I do my show and that's pretty much it. I mean, then that's what my life was before everything started going, crazy. So
what's it like watching the United States from another country?
Well, I mean, I gotta say, I'm not surprised.
Yes.
About the turmoil.
Yeah.
You remember the last time we recorded together, which was a year ago. Now, almost exactly a year ago. And I'd done two shows right around that time. I did your show and I did my friend Gordon's show, Rune Soup. And in both those, we were talking about, well, what's the challenge that's facing the world right now? And I said on your show, well, what actually is happening is that there are all these events that are coming. They're really intense. But the real problem is that people can't see like what's really happening, can't see beyond them, can't talk about anything but them. So it's actually the anxiety and feeling and obfuscating force around the events that's causing the greater problem, right? And then on the other show, I said, you know, this is the most Michaelic year, meaning we're going to have to, and I'm referencing the Archangel Michael, we're going to have to bring things from out of ourselves that the world usually gives to us. So in both cases, like I'm not psychic in the sense that I can see things or have visions or, you know, whatever, but I often will kind of know what's happening and it just takes a way of sort of surveying the world. And so when and obviously that was in, I think what, December, and then the other show was in January. So I didn't know that, you know, all this shit was going down.
Wow.
But when it started showing up, I knew that like, oh, well, this is just what I thought was going to happen, which is an intensification of problems that, you know, or intensification of a sense of a problem and not being able to actually see into the heart of it, which is the real problem, is the not being able to see. And also, we're going to need to bring things from out of ourselves that have usually been handed to us by the world. And so for me, it's not so crazy. And I see it happening everywhere in different ways. So yeah, in the US it's happening one way, and in Ireland it's happening another way, and in Italy it's happening another way, and China it's happening another way, so on and so forth. So it seems crazy in a way, but not so much actually. In other ways it seems like, okay, yeah, this is what was meant to happen, what was supposed to happen. This is the timeline that we're in, and we have to cope with it. And, you know, of course, that brings a lot of suffering for a lot of people, including people I know who have died or, you know, whatever. But that's not that's not avoidable.
Right. Yeah. It is happening everywhere. I guess that's kind of the one of the many ways that you can trick yourself right now is you can think, oh, it's only happening in my particular locality. You know, it's only happening in my city, or it's only happening in my country, when it seems to be a global phenomenon. That it's not just a pandemic, though, right? Remember, before the pandemic, there was like global uprisings that were happening, and this pandemic seemed to have, I guess you have it tried to stop them, but it didn't work. People kept doing it. But from your perspective, how would you analyze this? Like, what is the thing? What's the deeper truth behind the pandemic? What, you know what I mean? Like, the pandemic's like the ripple of something deep swimming under the water. So what's that thing?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to see the global crisis and the election and all that kind of stuff as surface expressions, because they seem like they go so deep. But in fact, you're right to say that they're surface expressions. There are a few things happening. One is there's a different kind of proximity to the spiritual world now, which is driving people crazy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was talking to this guy. I don't know if this episode will be out before the one that I recorded with this paranormal investigator, John Tenney, but he was bringing up, you know, about 100 years ago, this book called The Great God Pan came out. And in that, you know, this woman has this thing that affects her eyes and she can see the spiritual world and she goes crazy. And then about 100 years later, somebody made this movie Bird Box, where people are, you know, blindfolding themselves to not see these spiritual beings so they won't go crazy. Yeah. And now we're in a pandemic. And right. People are looking into it and going nuts.
Wow,
right?
Yeah.
When they look upon it. So, I mean, obviously we can say that pattern's arbitrary. Or like my friend Doug Rushkoff says, that could be fractal noia. You're coming up with the pattern that's not there. Yeah. But I would say, just because you're fractal noid doesn't mean that they're not after you again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it could be both, you know, arbitrary and true.
Yeah.
And so that's one thing, is just the proximity of the spiritual world in a different way and different spiritual beings. And we can talk about that if you want.
Would love to.
But then, another thing, and this is something I would caution everybody to look into, is that there is an assertion of certainty about what's happening.
Yes.
And I've been noticing it in everybody. People who I respect and love and usually get things right are asserting with absolute certainty what is going on, whether it's about vaccines or masks or conspiracies, or just that conspiracies are lies, or that the Trump government is doing this or this or this or this. And the truth is, what's happening is and now I'm presenting something with certainty, but I would say we can't rely on knowledge anymore. That's part of what's happening. That we should beware of this obfuscating sense of certainty. Like, actually, certainty is not bringing clarity at all. And part of that is because knowledge can't guide us through this. Actually taking an interest in each other, connectivity, that's the thing that brings us through. A thinking and feeling and action response to each other that is loving. And that's completely different. And also analyzing and looking at our desires, what we want and what we're afraid of. So that's the second thing. There's one more thing, and then we can go into each of these in more detail if you want.
Yeah.
The other thing is that there's a complete confrontation with and reimagining of health, the body, medicine, and illness that's happening right now. And we can see a culmination of that in a lot of things that have been happening over the past few years. So this isn't new to this moment, but it's unfolding. So battles over GMOs and agriculture, revisions of how, what kinds of foods we should eat, what's healthy for us, what's not healthy for us. The idea that people are not necessarily the biological sex that they're born into, but rather that there is a choice, or at least a choice to change the physicality of that. Yeah. If you wouldn't mark the actual feeling as a choice, there are ideas about, how vaccines work, if they're effective, if they're going to harm people. There are, all these, there's attempts to ban homeopathy in the U.S. that's going on right now that most people don't know about.
Did you hear about what just happened in Israel?
No, what happened?
They, for the first time, so you know the aging process is that science sees it as something to do with, and forgive my mispronunciation, something called telomeres, which...
Telomeres.
So these things, as you get older, they just get kind of run down. And so they just did a study in a hyperbaric oxygen chamber where they extended the telomeres of people through this therapy they were doing by 20%, which they said was the equivalent of putting them, like reversing their age by 20 years. And so that just happened. And also, there's all of this talk about these particular vaccines being like sort of new, the way that they're not like, they're not, the vaccine itself is using like new technology, and that it points to the possibility of incoming cancer treatments. And so, yeah,
it's not really a vaccine in the standard sense at all. Yeah. The mRNA vaccine is not. Yeah.
It's producing antibodies, or what's it like?
Well, it's just sort of break it down in really simplistic version. Like when you take a regular vaccine, and it would be good for people to know this, I think, wherever they want to land on it, it's good for people to know this. When you take a regular vaccine, you get a piece of, basically a piece of the virus, right, in forms of proteins. And then it's introduced to your body, and then you produce the antibodies against it. With an mRNA vaccine, it does something different. It introduces a prompt to your cells to produce those proteins and then produce the antibodies against them. So there's no long-term studies of these and what their effects are. So that's something that's important to think through, I think, wherever you might want to land on them.
I'm getting both vaccines.
Totally. I mean, I think so that, you know, I'm glad you brought up the aging thing, because there's also the FDA has been quietly trying to shut down compounding pharmacies and regulate hormones and what kind of hormones that you can get. So there are all these things that are happening right now. And I think we're finding out that you can store memory in water instead of material, instead of like, you know, like other solids.
Whoa, so I didn't know that.
And that's how homeopathy kind of works. Huh. So we have this whole reorganization of how we approach bodies, illness, anatomy, all that kind of stuff. And this, to me, is a really apparent unraveling of a lot of those concepts. And it's all happening at once. It's culminating now. And so we won't actually know for a while how this plays out, but we will see it play out. And the interesting thing is, we're so used to doing medicine in such a physical, materialistic way that we won't even, and thinking of our bodies and health and illness in a physical, materialistic way, that we won't actually even know how to identify when we're sick and when we're healthy anymore. And I think that we can see that right now.
What do you mean by that?
Well, like, if let's take it this way. If you are a sort of a bounded individual in a materialistic sense, the way that everybody thinks of individuals now and the kind of culture that we live in, and you're just walking around and you think you're healthy, and you've got no signs of illness or whatever, but you are embedded in systems that are completely unhealthy. Agricultural okay. systems, medical systems, social systems, relationships with other people. And you're actually making other people sick as a result by supporting those wow. systems. That's much different than being somebody that has a regard for all their layers of health. Let's say, you know, in the kind of terms we use now, mental, emotional, physical, spiritual, but we could also say ego, astral, etheric, mineral, if we want to use the occult bodies.
Yes.
And then also the ways that those weave into the spiritual social organism that everybody else is embedded in. So see, those kinds of things, when we start sensing health in that way, we might not even know if we're sick or healthy. You can also see this now just on a materialistic sense with people being like, oh, the case numbers of coronavirus are going up. But does that mean people are sick? Or does that mean that they're healthy? Does that mean that they're dying? Does that mean that they're... It's very confusing,
right.
And the messaging is confusing. And that's just a surface, like a metaphor almost, or an expression of the deeper thing that's going on with this reconfiguring. So those are the three things that I think are going
Whoa,
on right
man,
now.
That's...
Spiritual proximity,
yeah.
the obfuscating being of certainty, and the reevaluation of the individual health and illness and anatomy. Yeah.
A big thank you to DHM Detox for supporting this episode of the DTFH. If you're planning to enjoy some holiday drinks this year, why not take care of yourself simultaneously and enjoy DHM Detox? It's the vitamin for people who like to enjoy their drinks. You just take two capsules after your first couple of drinks and it goes to work. DHM Detox, it's here to help you maximize life's moments. You can enjoy your holiday drinks this year and get back to doing what you love the next day without feeling awful. Forget the Sunday scaries and feeling like garbage. Tens of thousands of people are using DHM Detox as their drinking buddy. DHM Detox uses science to help boost your body's natural response to alcohol and help break down those toxins. It's the perfect stocking stuffer or gift for your friends, family, and even yourself. Remember, holiday drinking season is upon us, so stay prepared for all of the festivities so you don't have to struggle through the next day. No Days Wasted offers a risk-free purchase, so if you don't love it, they'll refund you on your first box. This is a no-brainer. We've got a very special Black Friday sale with 30% off your order and free shipping in the U.S. Just head over to nodayswasted.co/Duncan30 and use promo code Duncan30 at checkout. That's nodayswasted.co/Duncan30. This week only for 30% off. Give them a try. I love them. I'm so glad that there's something out there that will make it so that it's not like someone smashed my head against the dark rocks of karma the next day after enjoying some holiday drinks. Thank you, DHM Detox. That last piece is really interesting to me. And, you know, when these are not exactly what you'd call earth-shattering epiphanies that I had living in California, but realizing that, yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. Like, I can be fine. Aaron can be fine. The baby can be fine. Our little compound, like the little square that we are living in, can be fine, a kind of oasis. But it's not, that's as soon as the homeless encampment, you know, mm-hmm. a few blocks down the street catches on fire like it did. You know what I mean? Like, we're not fine anymore because now smoke, black, weird, black, rolling tent smoke as a kind of reminder of like, hey, look, you look, well, I'm glad y'all are doing okay. Here's a burning tent that was all someone had in the world that just got ignited by like a, you know, whatever they were trying to cook. And so that's, to me, really smart because it's what you're talking about is smart in the sense that, yeah, it's an invitation to redefine what health means. I struggle with this all the time. you know, with privilege and all of that, you know, like if I'm doing great, am I really doing great? Like, you know, the other day, there's a stupid game I'm addicted to called Hearthstone. And I'm just addicted. It's a dopamine milker. You know, it's like just they figured out how to just milk those sweet udders up in your brain, just squeeze out just basic numb down hypnotic pleasure. And it's really, really refined. But I'm like, I paid like $20 to buy these cards. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, I just watched on TV the Dallas traffic of people in line to get food. You know what I mean? And like, I've never been able to get those things to square up. You know, I've never been able to do anything more than acknowledge the weird sense of like, oh, this doesn't feel quite right. And then also like allowing myself to like enjoy the world because I've never resolved these two. Is that what you're talking about? Like holistically, it's hard to say we're doing great when clearly many, many, many people are not doing great right now. Mm-hmm. Is that what you mean?
Yes, that's part of it. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a version of it that I think that's one of the most important versions. So we are moving towards, whether we like it or not, a different version of being human in which we sense the suffering and feeling of others. And it would be good if we prepared ourselves for that, because that's coming whether we want it or not. I mean, right now, again, there's an exoteric version of it where it's just like, look at all the cases around the world and all the people getting sick, and maybe I shouldn't leave the house today because of what humanity is going through, right? Yeah. So we see like a version of that. But more than that, you know, like I've gotten in a couple of they weren't like fights or arguments, but they were like interesting conversations with points of tension on my show with Mona Al-Tahawi and Michael Hart and Dean Spade. I was talking to them about, you know, there's this whole thing, and it was sort of intensified a bit by the Me Too movement, which has done some good things and I think has done some horrible things. But that was intensified with this idea that like I own my body. Nobody touches my body but me. It's my property. I own my body. Right. And when I started thinking about that more deeply, I thought, okay, well, fair enough. Let's not get rid of the part where someone just gets to throw you, you know, to the ground and rape you or punch you in the face or whatever. Okay, fine. However, like, can we talk about this in a way that doesn't deepen our commitment to materialistic private property laws, which is where that comes from? And why? Because we're moving towards a place where you look at the person who's had their tent burn and you look upon them and you say, that is my body too. That's my body too. And you actually won't be able to avoid the suffering that they're feeling. So it's, you can't block it out anymore. With no spiritual preparation for that, you can understand how fucked we are, right?
Are you suggesting that there's going to be some kind of amplified compassion in humanity that's coming, like as some evolutionary outgrowth or something? Like how is that going to happen? What do you mean?
Shifts in consciousness happen, you know, whether we like them or not.
Right.
What people will probably reach for as a stopgap, unfortunately, is a sort of Borg-like connected algorithmic version that keeps us all separate and drives us deeper just into being discreetly individuated in our bodies in ways that make us feel connected but aren't. Like, that's why we'll reach for all sorts of computerized things that are looming on the horizon and we need to be careful. But that's just going to stay, that's just going to temporarily stave off the thing that's coming, which is, yes, this connectivity. Right now, the thing that protects us, protects you from feeling the guy whose tent burned, is that you have a body and you have a certain concept of your body. And that it's like a body being embodied is how spiritual development happens right now, because the vast, diffuse, crazy, interlocking, interwoven, always active, dynamic spiritual world enters into a limited address where certain things could happen. If it didn't, it would be too diffuse, but it enters into this limited address, which is your body, yeah. in the same way that a sacred stone, you know, can allow a god to inhere in it that people will go and right. visit. So when that changes, there's going to be a psychic shock to everybody involved if they haven't done enough work to be able to handle the suffering of the entire world.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and that will bring its own challenges. It's not like we're, so that's why I'm saying it may not just be that we all have radical compassion for each other. Like, in fact, it might be that there's actually intense worldwide connected suffering that only people who have done certain kinds of work are able to deal with.
You know, I think the weird reaction that people had to the trans community, not like kind of coming out of the underground, I think it's an indication of like how upsetting this shift you're talking about is going to be. I mean, I feel like that's kind of, totally. You know, it's like, man, people just can't handle the fact that humans are taking that level of control over their external identity. That already is driving people nuts. But wow, that's nothing, right? Like, that's what you're saying is like, yeah, it's not just that level of transformation is happening, but we're talking about the thing that up until this point has just been a certainty. Like, I know my body is mine. I know that that's not me. That's other people. Mm-hmm. That's the stranger. And I'm me. And within that splitting up, it's like there's so much possibility for pleasure, but also, holy fuck, that's where fascism is born. That's where, like, whenever I watch, and we watch it way too much, Connor, but whenever Aaron and I watch Fox News, we had sex. We didn't realize we've had sex to Sean Hannity twice. And we're both like, we've permanently... we're probably not gonna be okay. You can't come back from that. But like, whenever I'm watching that particular sermon from these high priests of whatever that weird religion is that they're giving sermons on, whenever I hear that, it's amazing how much violence is in their language, how much they want to hurt, and how much every single thing that they believe in depends on the isolation that you're talking about, the condensation of the self into an individual identity. And also in it is a lot of fear that people like you are out there suggesting that there's a shift happening, and it doesn't matter what you do to try to stop it. That to me, what you're saying, that's the part that's the most interesting, is I never thought of it like that. I've always thought like, well, from a, like, it's a kind of it's a social shift that is going to result from a combination of connective technology allowing folks to witness the world in ways it's never been seen before, producing compassion that, or at the very least, questioning of lifestyle that could lead to transformation. But I never thought of it as like the way you're describing it. Sounds more like a flood or a shift in like you know how the sun goes into solar maximum and solar minimum. It sounds, you know, it sounds more like is that what you're talking about? Like almost like a complete shift in the planet itself.
Yeah, well, I mean, the planet is interwoven with our consciousness. So, yeah, so the planet will also change as a result, of course. I mean, I think the technology part, well, let me put it this way. When I say it's coming, whether we like it or not, or what, no matter what, it's coming, that doesn't mean that it'll be pleasant for us, right? Like, that doesn't, so the choices are not whether or not this kind of consciousness shows up. But, you know, the way I say it is, do you want 1,000 years of human suffering, or do you want like 20 years of work? and then to do well for and be happy for a really long time. Because, you know, 2033 is the actual millennium, because it's that's 2,000 years after Christ died, right? So that's not... So the resurrection is the thing that marks the turning.
Yeah.
So sometimes I use that as just a touch point. I mean, I'm not like a prophet, or I'm not going to get all Mayan calendar or whatever, but I think it's important to have a date like that in mind sometimes, to be like, all right, well, there's some sort of collective conscious thing around that date. So maybe, you know, that we might know even if we don't recognize it. So let's try to organize around that date. But so it's more that the technology right now is unfortunately very adversarial, and it's because we don't know how to make it moral yet. We don't know how to engage with it in a moral way. So, you know, something that's good for people to do if they're listening, and you and I probably should have done this at the beginning, but it's like, you know, when you talk to someone on Zoom or whatever, just be like, I'm a real live person talking to you live right now. Mm. Like, let's look at it that way. Let's meet that way. My friend Mark O'Connell has this play called How to Be a Machine that's based on his book, or To Be a Machine, I think it's called. And Jackie Gleason, the Joffrey from Game of Thrones, was like, plays my friend Mark in this play.
Cool.
But it was during lockdown, and it was really profound because he just addresses, because everybody's watching on their computers. And first of all, you take a picture of yourself, and then on the stage that he's on, you see pictures of yourself on these like iPads in the audience, which is pretty weird. But he says, listen, I'm on a stage right now. I know you might think that this is television. It's not. I'm here, I'm talking. Even that simple act of drawing into the presence of this is a real live thing. I think people should do that on their Zoom calls. But it's just we're going to have to learn moral ways to deal with the technology that's in place. But more than that, we're going to have to learn how to build and create moral technology, which is quite a feat, given that right now technology would seek to distort everything that we think we want. All the progressive social agendas, once they intersect with tech, are going to be distorted and sort of mangled and used against us, whether it's UBI or healthcare or whatever it might be. Those things are all going to be utilized as ways to exploit us.
Wow, man. The what you just said, it actually brings to mind a paranoid fantasy that I allow myself to indulge in from time to time.
Okay.
Just to creep myself out. And one of the things that this sudden like digitization of connection to other people is one of the possibilities it's produced, depending on how locked down, so to speak, you become, is that you can't ask yourself when you're on the third Zoom call of the day or on a conversation with someone that you can't see that's coming through a computer, is this really my friend? How do I know that this isn't just some deep fake and that we're like, so like when the NSA, and obviously I don't believe this, but when the NSA vacuumed up all data sets, when Google vacuumed up all the data, when the 23andMe and it got all the genome, all that stuff was used to essentially replicate reality and then pipe it back to each individual via their machines, so that we have not even been talking to each other at all for a while now. The only time you know for sure you're talking to someone is if they're in your presence. Otherwise, you might be talking to an AI version of them that's being piped into you. I know that's not happening, but like if I've eaten enough weed, you know what I mean?
but it is happening. When you, all the things, like something I've learned about you is that you're, over the years of knowing you, is that your crazy fantasies often reflect something that's really happening, that people just, that's already going on. I think it's like, you know, like when you're talking to somebody and they're thinking about using Facebook while you're talking to them, that's that.
Oh, wow. Right?
Yeah. You're not talking to that human being.
Yeah.
What about all the times people walk down the street looking at things and framing them in their head as pictures for Instagram, or coming up with a joke to tweet about, you know, or translating their experience into the machine. The machine doesn't, it could, and maybe the things you're talking about, they probably will happen. And I'm sure, you know, there are plenty of fake accounts that we've interacted with and stuff, but the machine works by, you know, becoming an interlocutor between you and your experience, not by, you know, like standing in for you. It's standing in you, which is a different thing.
Yeah. Right, man. Yeah. And it's, I love, you know, I love just what you, just starting a phone call and being like, hey, remember, I'm a person and you're a person. Because there does seem to be something in the machine that has a sulfuric prismatic effect, you know, where just like what you're saying, all the good things, once they go through that particular series of wild transformations that are happening when your voice or your image is being converted to ones and zeros and piped into satellites and fiber optic cables, is that the code gets in there a little bit and warps it to some degree. You know, and that warping isn't just the warbles that you hear on Zoom, which are already kind of weird. That, you know, that bending thing when you're not getting enough uploads. But also, it's the color of Twitter. It's, you know what I mean? It's the color of Instagram. It's the color of Zoom. It's the way, it's the font they've decided to use when you're wanting to type to your friend. And it's also the commercials that appear literally on Twitter, man. I took a screenshot of it today. Twitter did a poll, and the poll was, I'll read it to you. So, like, you know, you're already going on to Twitter to look at these sort of, I guess a tweet is like a footprint of someone's mind that they left. And so, throughout the tweets, there's commercials. That's how Twitter makes money. But here's a Twitter survey. Twitter survey. Twitter would like your feedback. Which of the following do you most associate with music experiences and benefits? American Express, Capital One, Chase, Citi, or none of the above?
All of the above.
When I think of music, I think of American Express. That's the first thing that comes to mind. But just in that survey is not really a survey. It's a message. And the message is saying, your credit cards are music. And like, it's like, I couldn't have, if someone was like, Duncan, I'm trying to write a diabolical, satanic text of blasphemies, and I wonder if you could come up with a verse or two. Yeah, I would never have come up with something so satanic. And I always feel bad saying satanic because some of my friends are brilliant Satanists and they're sweet. You know, we need a better word than Satan. But like, you know, so fucked up that it's like, yeah. You know, for my best music experience is, they used to be with Amex, but now Chase for sure.
Totally. Well, when you and I are talking to each other right now, when you talk to somebody on the phone or whatever, yeah, all that translation's happening into something that looks like, or is a sort of a more physical representation of numbers, of zeros and ones and all that. But also, let's not forget that, like, the message is intersected with the oblivion of space.
Right.
Whoa. It literally is being pushed into a place where that is completely anti-human, the oxygenless, soundless, materialist, you know, void of space that enters in and then it comes back to us. So it brings the void with it every single time we talk.
God, you mean you're kind of like boomeranging your consciousness into a computer chip, which is just a compressed void? Is that what you mean?
I mean space. Like, it goes into a satellite. It just goes into space.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So it's like, you know, I mean, I realize that that's still like, there's wherever that's in the ionosphere above, But it's intersecting with a completely anti-human environment, like wow. just by virtue of that.
Yeah.
Right. And then it's bringing that in, you know, if I'm standing outside and we're at the beach and the waves are roaring and I yell at you through the waves, you know, yeah. like I have to talk a different way and the message sounds different and it brings wow. different things with it. Right. So, it's bringing that, it's bringing that through.
Man, that's brilliant.
And so, the space message of Chase Bank, the band, you know, I mean, maybe they are like a band in oblivion, you know, who knows?
Credit card companies are alien rock and roll bands on tour through our planet. Wow, man, that is so interesting. It's like every time you communicate with someone in this way, yeah, you become like a little hailstorm of tiny, tiny little granules of the void of oblivion that are being projected into our little sector of existence by our technology, man. That is so absolutely bizarre. Well, then what? So, I mean, obviously we don't have much of a choice here, do we? I mean, what are we going to do? We
have to overcome it.
Or like, what do you mean? Like sort of filter it out, understand it's there and then figure out ways to filter it out. Is that what you mean?
No. I mean like, so here's a detour and then I'll get back to it. So here's a materialistic idea of food. Okay. Food is like, you are what you eat. So you eat food. It is like, it has these kinds of, you know, carbs and proteins and these antioxidants and all that kind of stuff. And then it turns into physical tissue or whatever through the process of eating it. Now that's not what happens. What happens is all food is poison. You introduce the poison to your body. Your body produces spiritual forces that overcome the spiritual poison, the nexus of poisons that you've introduced. And those spiritual forces build up what we call bodies through their action of absolutely destroying the poison. So why am I bringing, I know maybe that's a weird concept, but like, let's see if we can come back to it. So what happens when these messages come into us, and I mean the message in the way that it's translated into this weird, like, combination jumble of sounds that we're not really used to hearing with our ears, the way that space and oblivion is brought into the message, the way that, you know, all those other things that you were talking about, like the weird Zoom seals, you know, like quiver sound and the all that kind of shit. All that comes in and we have to overcome it, right? And we do overcome it to some extent. And we also overcome like the Wi-Fi signals, 5G, all that kind of shit that is coming. But it becomes more and more difficult to take all of that in. And so we're going to have to do training, which is mostly spiritual training, to generate the forces within us that can overcome the things that enter into us. Yeah. And we can do that with almost anything, by the way. But it takes... Because we're the favored things on this planet. I mean, we're the addresses of consciousness of God here. So we've got to go into a kind of, but we've got to go into a kind of training to make that happen.
What does that training look like?
Well, it's different for everybody. So that's part of the problem. Everybody has a different spiritual task. Some things work better than others. I mean, obviously, it's like the foundation of doing meditation, contemplation, all that. All that always helps, you know. And whatever way you want to do that, even if it's, I mean, maybe don't use an app for that. But like, even if you want to do it with an app, that's fine. But I think that the training is different for each challenge. It's a little hard to say, Duncan, because it is so different for everybody. If I led two people through the same exact spiritual development course, they would have completely different results to each like level of that development.
So, I was just curious if there's like a specific, you know, like, because one thing you're saying, which is so brilliant, is that, you know, we are confronting something that at least in form is new. I mean, when has humanity ever had to wrestle with this fascinating problem of connectivity being warped by code, the sort of script of essentially wizards casting spells via the framework through which we are connecting, and this code has gotten completely enmeshed in us, and this is a new problem. I mean, I know that you could say the Earth is a centrifuge, and that as part of being on this amazing centrifuge, we sort of blend. But now this idea of like blending in with matter in this deep way, it's kind of, the form is new, isn't it? So that to me means that, and I know many people who have said to me, actually, everything's pretty much the same as it was when Buddha gained realization. But, you know, when I think about Buddha gaining realization, I know that one thing he didn't think about upon becoming the great world turner was like, shit, I got to tweet this. I just got enlightened, man. So like, this is a new thing. And meaning that, yeah, I could see how an entire new spiritual tradition would spring up to help people begin to sort of work through this alchemy that you're talking about. You know, I never thought of eating as poison, but yeah, like if you don't think eating's poison, you know, see what happens if you like inject a ham sandwich into your arm. You're fucked, man.
Right.
Like, puree some trout and inject it into your neck and see what happens. You know, so yeah, I get it, man. Like we have to like transform our food, and then that it's interesting that you're saying the conflict grows our body. And as I'm following that idea, I guess the next question I would have for you is, then what is the body that is going to be formed from this conversion of the poison of technology into, I guess, connectivity? What body is growing from this, Connor? What is the form that is growing out of this?
Well, so we can get a little bit of a picture of it if we understand that the thing that we're overcoming isn't physical in the same sense as food is. Now, food's not physical either. Like, I mean, I'm trying to more and more just get people to think as much as I can in completely non-materialistic ways. So let's just walk away from materialism entirely. So I have a little, you know, I'm just adding that caveat there when I'm saying, oh, it's different than the physicality. That has a different form, right? Obviously, you can see microwaves are not the same as a peach, right? So in their density, in their presence, in the way we detect them, all that kind of stuff. So that's the first thing to understand. It's like, as we train ourselves to overcome invisible forces as opposed to physical ones, so we overcome the physical ones and it builds something, you know, the things that look physical, like the peach, the broccoli, you know, the ham sandwich, whatever, and it builds something that looks like a physical body in response. So as we overcome these, we will be building some kind of invisible body that, you know, is interwoven with the cosmos in a different way. Like when you're talking about like these black magicians or wizards or whatever doing, you know, these code things, like think about that. That is new. We've actually changed the tone of the air itself. You know, it's swimming with invisible forces now in a way that it wasn't before. And the thing... So the people that say the Buddha stuff, I mean, that's just, it's just incorrect. I mean, God bless them, but that's just, it's not true. And I see Buddhists actually saying stuff like that all the time. And it frustrates me because they're not recognizing the limits of Buddhism.
Right.
But the Buddha also, or the Buddhists, and so on and so forth, that there's not the conscious piece of the entire globe at the same time, right? So we also have that piece to deal with.
Right.
Like, actually, we have seen the planet Earth, you know? You know, it's the we took a picture of it, and the astronaut that was up there put it, whether that was a conspiracy or not, but the astronaut put his thumb up and said, "Everything I know is behind my thumb," yeah. which is a great metaphor for what we do with our phones now. But, you know, and how we operate them with our
Whoa.
Thumbs. But the fact is the planet is now part of our consciousness, and that was not before. And so that also brings us another challenge to overcome. So these are thought constructs, they're invisible constructs, they're the changing of different physical constructs. So as we build sort of above those, we will become a higher kind of a more Christ-like or a more loving version of those things.
Wow. I want to put in italics what you said regarding the air swimming with data. How that is something that I think people don't want to think about, because it's so fucking weird to just think at any given moment how many emails are washing up against your body, going through your body, how many stock orders, how many dick pics, how many dick pics at any given moment are just like moving through us. Like, you know, I remember you pointed this out. I don't know. So a friend of mine who was really smart and mystical like you just pointed out the simple reality of, like, when we were in New York, the rivers of shit right underneath the city, you know, just like rivers of shit and piss right under any city that you don't see, but they're there. And then you add to that all the many dead bodies around you at any given moment. And then add to that the fact that you are being vibrated by dick pics all day long. Doesn't it go through us, or does it bounce off of us? Do these data feeds, do they go into our,
Oh, they go in. Yeah, they go in, man. Like, that's how the tech works, is it has to go through solid matter. That's how you can get Wi-Fi in your house, right? Like, it has to go through the walls.
Right.
So it's interesting, isn't it? Like, the Fantastic Four is a story about, you know, four people go into space and, like, cosmic rays go through them.
Yeah.
And then they have things that are very much like the occult bodies. Like, there's a mineral, the thing. There's, like, the etheric body of, you know, the invisible woman. There's the astral body of the, you know, human torch. And there's the ego body of the, you know. So anyway, that's just all to say, like, these things will pronounce our understanding of actual anatomy. So that goes back to the original point. You know, and as far as overcoming those, yes, so those are going through you. Those are going through you constantly. So we've got to figure out a way to deal with that. And something nobody ever talks about, and I don't know why nobody talks about this, maybe because it's bullshit. that's why nobody talks about it, but we'll see. Which is, like, you know, with the thing with 5G that's really interesting to me, and with microwaves in general, is that they send waves through, I'm hopefully getting this correct, they send waves through solid matter, and the waves that are longer, this sounds counterintuitive, but the waves that are longer that are carrying the information can carry less information, but they can go through matter more easily. So if you just imagine, like, the longer a wave, the more possible it is for it to come unbroken through a wall, right? So with 5G, it's like little tiny, like teeny, teeny, tiny bits, but they can carry more information, but they can't pass through matter as easily, which is why you have to set up these mini cell bases everywhere, because you have to have more and more, right? But the thing that people don't talk about is, with the rise of the miniaturization of the waves, we've been talking more and more in blips, and art has been happening in flashes. And there's been a difficulty in sort of keeping to a certain point, to sustaining a thought. So everybody talks about this cultural reasons, or it's the internet, or blah, blah, blah. But it's actually like the way that the information is coming in is a constant flip book that is constantly breaking our attention by the very substance that is printed on.
Wow.
Which is the wave. So, I mean, this, to me, that's the other challenge too, is how do we make something, how do we create a continuous consciousness when all the information is being given to us in like hyper flipbook form?
Right.
So some of that training involves continuity. Draw. Like, this sounds so silly, but draw. See, this is an experiment for people because it actually helped me. I was having trouble sleeping. So I started drawing in continuous lines. Like, I would draw like an elephant, but just with one line and try to get as much as possible.
Yeah.
In it. I would sing like long notes. I would try to, you know, write and read, you know, longer sentences, that kind of stuff. Create a sense of continuity and sustained flow movement and see if you sleep better.
Whoa, that's so cool, man. I never thought of that. It's like, if consciousness is attention, if, you know, our attention, the longer our attention is held on this thing or that, the more continuity there will be. And yeah, that is getting broken up in the most extreme way, because we're constantly compressing ourselves down into our devices and then uncompressing into reality, going back into the devices. Whoa. Very interesting. Like, it's like almost like a stroboscopic kind of teleportation, yes, leaping into the world of our phones and the news and the, and then back out into this world, then in and out. It's like, God, think how fucked up that would be if, like, dolphins started doing that, you know, if they, and whales started breaching, you know what I mean, too fast. So they were going up and down, up and down, up and down. You would be so terrified. We'd be worried about them, but that's kind of what we're doing. You know, we're coming into this world for a little, some people grudgingly, and then jumping right back into the, whatever the particular data sphere is. And then coming back out into this world with generally, like, you know, people are annoyed, you know, like when you have to stop whatever it is you're doing to go attend to life. So it's not just that we're doing this stroboscopic back and forth, but for many people, the return to the planet is painful.
Totally. And what happens when you do the same movement repeatedly in rapid succession, with a small break in between, again and again and again and again and again and again and again?
What?
You heat things up.
Wow.
You heat things up. And so, you know, I'm not going to make great claims about climate change here, but it's important for us to consider the consciousness aspect of the phenomena that we observe around us. And
you're saying it's producing a kind of friction that
yeah.
Wow.
You know, well, I mean, it's, you know, and there's plenty of solid and sort of mainstream, so we don't have to go down the rabbit hole, research on how Wi-Fi and certain hertz, you know, affect insects and how it heats their bodies up. And it probably does not do that to human beings in the same way, although it seems to cause other health problems, which unfortunately the ways that these technologies are reviewed is only looking for the heat stuff. But when you look at insects, there seems to be a pretty large agreement from entomologists that, like, these heat insects' bodies up, creating infertility and all sorts of other things, I believe. But just go look into that yourself. Don't take my word for it. I'm just a mumbling lunatic about this.
You don't sound like a mumbling lunatic to me.
Well, then the space rays heated the bees up and fires were caused and food is all poison. Yeah, you know, yeah. Like,
I know
whatever.
What you mean.
It's like Nostradamus. But
yeah.
But you see, like, anyway, heating is a is also a capacity or something that's happening right now in the world, and we need to look at a consciousness component of that rather than just trying to constantly locate it in whatever physical thing, materialistic thing we can put a Band-Aid on. And why would it show up in this turn of events? Why is it arising for us is something else that we need to think about. And people love to say that they're having a spiritual approach and then give materialistic answers to things. And to me, the only thing we can do is stop thinking about things materialistically. That's the only way out. And one of the ways you do that is people are fond of saying, well, you know, we need to have completely new solutions to these problems. We need to rethink. We need new solutions. We need like to come up with completely new ways to think. And, you know, they do that Einstein quote or whatever. But the thing is, if you want to build the world from the ground up again, it's not just the solutions that are completely wrong. The problems are wrong, too. You got the wrong idea of the problems. They're not the problems that you think they are. So we need a complete rethink and walking away from materialism, which again is inevitable. It's just going to happen. So get yourself ready for it. Is I think the best way to approach.
Yeah, that. Are you saying like ownership, like the perception of ownership is on the way out as we understand what it means to own something or. Do you, and also,
oh, I don't mean consumerism. I mean materiality, like that there's stuff and objects. That's not true. Like there's no material. There's no matter. You know, when people say, well, does God exist? No, the question has to be, does matter exist? There's no proof for it. So we need to reevaluate that and start from
okay,
there.
So the David Nichtern, who is my meditation teacher, we talk about absolute and relative reality a lot. So from... Mm-hmm. Absolute reality, I see what you're saying. But from relative reality, in other words, as we are right now, we are kind of cradled in density. You know what I mean? Like, matter.
Density?
Yeah, like I'm sitting in a chair that's denser than me. It's dense, and that's why I'm able to sit in it. It's not a steam or a fog, though I would love to sit in fog, you know, but I... and so in that sense there is matter. I guess I'm having trouble following you.
Yeah. Well, so let's do this. Let's do the chair, okay? You use the word density.
Yes.
How are you experiencing as you sit on the chair? I mean, you can close your eyes. Tell me what you're experiencing.
Okay. I've got let's see. One of my
with the chair.
And one of my elbows is on the arm of the chair.
Is it okay? So just let's stop there because that's a big claim. Is it on the arm of the chair or are you experiencing something? What are you experiencing?
I'm experiencing the feeling of my gimp as he continues to give me the blowjob he's been giving me during. I'm just kidding. I had to. I'm so sorry. No, I'm experiencing my elbow against my jacket. It's actually on the chair. So there's kind of like a soft fabric underneath my elbow.
Yeah. So let's roll that back a little bit and try to talk about the experience rather than naming the objects.
Okay.
Right. So like, I don't want to put words in your mouth. So I'm just going to tell you about what I'm experiencing right now. My eyes closed on this chair. I'm experiencing a region, which if I were in what you're calling this other version of reality, I would say is my butt. Right. But I'm experiencing a region of pressure.
Yeah,
right? I'm experiencing a region of pressure that's meeting partially that's it. I'm experiencing a region of pressure. So I'm experiencing a thought or I'm having an experience of a kind of welling realm of pressure in a certain area of my consciousness.
Yeah.
See what I mean? So if you can do that with the connectivity of where you are touching the chair,
yeah.
or what you're calling the chair, that's how we start talking about a real experience. So maybe I would just say do that now and see how it feels. And if we have to cut this part out,
I like this exercise. If I just look at it fully just from that sense, it's definitely like places. 1, 2, 3, 4 And then of course the region of my feet are, I see what you're saying. It's like these experiential kind of like, I don't know how to put it, dimples or warps or something that, that are, you know, from this perspective, I see what you're saying. It's like a, that's so trippy, man. How weird is that? It's really weird. You're like stripping away one of the ways that I would crystallize reality into matter.
Totally. And it doesn't mean that the other stuff's not real. The concept of the chair is real, but it has a different kind of reality and aspect and contour to it than the percept of the chair. Yeah. Right? Or the percept of sitting. So right now there are these, dimples, warps. I like that. These sort of involving contact points that you can't even really locate in space when you close your eyes, which is also sort of the weird thing. It's like, where are those? So that's where you start getting into an idea of something is happening here that's I could collectively put together a bunch of parts and say that's reality. But if I start looking into my experience, something weirder is happening. And that can start leading me away from materialism because I'm like, okay, there are these tones of expression that I, you know, would call feeling. But there are these tones of expression and there are these interceding concepts that connect to the tones of expression. And when I build those together and open my eyes, I'm sitting in a chair.
Wow, man.
You can do it with sight. You can do it with hearing. You can do it with feeling, taste, anything. But when you start doing that kind of radical phenomenology, that's what I say the occult is really just radical phenomenology, you then begin to move away from the material conception. So I've done that now for years and years. And so now the material world is just really fucked up. It blinks in and out for me. In a way.
This blinking in and out, this what you're talking about is something that I've intuited. And I am often like really perplexed by it. Because to me, one of the insights I get from it is just a sense of there being this kind of vast space. I don't know of a better, the stuff we're calling matter kind of like veils or, you know, mists over or something. And then within that, this new kind of dimensionality, you know what I'm talking about? A sense of there being even a thing that I am outside of matter can weirdly navigate in or something like. But that becomes really, for me, a little off-putting in the sense of like, shit, man, I don't want to swim away from my, and, you know, whatever the particular nexus of experience that I've determined to be me is. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, there's this, fuck, can you just, 100%. Can you swim away from it? Can you just sort of leave it behind? Is there some possibility that you could, as you understand it, would just continue on with your life, but that part of you that was considering that locus as you just like, see you later, I'm out. That was fun, but I've got other places to go. Fly away into the background. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
100%. Yeah. So two things. One is for people listening, I do a whole like experiment with this with sight with Pete Holmes on my show. Actually, we spent like 20 minutes just talking about sight. And what's actually happening experientially there is pretty mind-blowing. It was great. And I think you just have to look up that episode, Connor, it'd be Pete Holmes. But I'm offering that as a way for people to do something right now if they listen to that. Because sight is one of the seemingly more difficult, but then it starts getting really interesting and weird when you do it. When you close your eyes,
would you feel weird repeating it with me? Do you want to repeat it with me, or do you feel like that produces a redundancy?
No, let's do it. Let me answer your question and then let's try it. Okay. I mean, I was in the same room as Pete when we did it, so it'll make a little bit of a difference, but that's okay. So, so then the other thing is, so if you think about words on a page, there are symbols, which are letters, that strung together make words, that strung together make sentences, with spaces, strung together make paragraphs and make a book, et cetera, et cetera. The physical world, what we call the physical world, is an intersection of combinatory spirits that present a certain kind of reading because we know how to read the language in a certain way. So just like those letters, words, sentences, paragraphs form a book, these spirits come together and create a certain reading of the world, and that's our experience of it. And interestingly, I think the reading metaphor still continues on, because when you're a kid, before you can read, think about how weird that was. There are all these weird symbols all around you that just mean fucking nothing. And you don't even really pay attention to them. And then suddenly you can read and meaning springs out everywhere in a different way and you can't undo it. So that's kind of what happens. It's like, yeah, you move away, but you gain all these new tones of meaning. So you can, you can't necessarily unimagine it, but you get all this other stuff in. So it creates all this new stuff and it's really cool. And these new adventures and these new stories and this new way of being.
Yeah. You know?
So, I mean, you wouldn't want to learn to unread again. So it's, you know, you can understand, I mean, maybe some people do, but you can understand why you wouldn't want to go back after you gain this new way of apprehending meaning in the
temporarily
world, corners and contours of meaning.
It'd be cool to temporarily. I mean,
you can't read in your dreams, so that's fine. I mean, mostly, you know what I mean? So it's like, there will still be pockets.
Yeah. You know, this is something I was thinking about earlier today. It's just, my thoughts are in English and how weird that is. What language was I thinking in before I learned English? And that, or the, what's the precursor state before the imposition of language, the tyranny of language takes my thinking stuff and forces it into the labor camps of English, you know? You get this free, wild sense of something and energy. And then it gets smashed down into language. And then that's what you hear as your thoughts.
Well, sort of. So the I feel like I'm being really contrary
like
on this
it.
Episode. But I love everything you're saying. It's like all these like prompts for me. It's been a weird couple years, man. I mean, I moved to Ireland and I'm largely by myself, you know, 24 hours a day. So I have had a lot to think about. So language isn't content. I think this is the thing that's confusing for people, and especially philosophers. They really overemphasize what language is. Language is a positive. Here, this is good. I'm going to tell you how magic works.
Right.
So, you know, when people say, like a word in like a, you know, a fantasy novel or whatever, they say the word and the magic happens, right? And people think it's the word itself that's causing the thing. But that's not what's happening. You know, abracadabra means as I speak, I create.
Okay.
That's what that word means, right? So that's, let's say, a magical word. Words, when we speak them, are positive voids. This is, someone else described it to me this way, but let's just say they're positive voids. And they're positive voids from which spiritual beings emerge. So collections of words tend to evoke a different kind of spiritual presence different kinds of languages tend to evoke different spiritual presences. It's like the way that this guy, Scott Elliott Hicks, described it is you have a boom tube, like in DC Comics, where like there's this empty tube and Darkseid and his minions come out of it, right? It like makes this sound and then these things arrive, or, you know. But we can say everything that comes out of our mouths is creating a shape, a pathway, a portal for things to emerge from. And the different contours of each word, depending on the way we carve the air with our mouth, and so on and so forth, is conducive to a different spiritual form arising. So speech is an act, is an act of spiritual force that controls or contours or engages with the positive void of words. Wow. So when we're doing that thinking and thoughts, really what we're, oh shit, hold on. when we're doing that thinking of thoughts in words, what's occurring is the noticing inwardly of the arrival of spirits through their portals. So when we speak a word, when we engage with something magically through word, what we're doing is infusing ourselves with the contour of the portal to evoke a certain response through the arrival and presence of spiritual being.
Wow.
Yeah.
That really explains mantra to me better than any other explanation I've heard of it. That is so wild, Connor. That is so wild. it's so interesting. I feel like I'm talking to Zarathustra or something. Like you've been up in some kind of cave burning incense and getting slowly enlightened out there. Really cool, man. You've always done this to me. Like you are at like a living psychedelic, and anytime we podcast, I inevitably feel like, oh man, this was not a microdose. Like there's a few people I podcast with where I'm always excited about it, but I'm excited about it in the way I get excited about LSD. You know what I mean? There's a little bit of dread associated with it, not because the experience is not enjoyable, but because it's it's powerful and like that's
can be a lot
this way of reframing things. But this is actually something I've been sort of praying for, you know, and wondering about, just because there is lately I have been brushing up against the confines or the constrictions of what I'm gradually, slowly realizing are just my notions about the way things are. And also I've felt a little, I don't want to say like embarrassed, but just a general sense of like, God, you sure, just like what you were saying up front, this kind of weird certainty that I lean into regarding everything, you know, this like general, which is ultimately a kind of stagnation. So that's why I love chatting with people like you, because you specifically, because you are really good at breaking those stagnant forms apart. Do you think that you have time to do the, maybe if not a sight exercise, a hearing exercise, or either one?
I think the sight one's probably better. And I have as much time as you want, because it's 6:30 and I just drank like 3 coffees.
Oh, so my God, you drink coffee at night? Or is it morning?
Only when I do podcasts.
Connor, Habib, that is the most controversial thing you've told me that you do. Okay, so let's do it, man, because I think it's a great way to wrap this up. And maybe before we do it, let's get the business stuff out of the way. Because are you currently giving classes right now? Or are you?
I'm not giving classes. I mean, I'm just doing the show, really. So that's Against Everyone with Connor Habib. And there's the Patreon, patreon.com/ConnorHabib. And that's my main gig. I mean, I have a novel, but it's not coming out till late next year from Norton in the US
cool,
and Penguin
man.
Doubleday
I can't wait.
Here in Ireland in the
fiction?
UK. Fiction? But fiction, yes. Yeah, it's like a very gruesome, dark, gruesome and dark book.
Can't wait.
And I'm working on another book right now about the occult, but that's going to be quite a bit down the line. But I do all kinds of like sermons and stuff like that with my Patreon patrons about these things. I call them sermons because I think people want theological language
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's that.
Thank you. Okay, let's do this this sermon or meditation or practice, whatever you want to call it. And thank you very much.
Yeah, Connor. This is just an yeah, of course, man. And this is just an experiential thing. Okay, so anybody can do this. And it's so simple. Okay, so let's start with the behind world. All right.
Okay.
What do I mean by that? You have an entirely different experience, Duncan, I would assume, of what's in front of you than what's behind you.
Okay.
And that's a result of sight. So I want you to just, let's move into that space by taking that in.
Okay.
What does that feel like? What's the difference?
Literally a kind of, there's a sense of almost like a weird kind of magnetic pull or something when I put my attention where I can't, like, to the behind world. Like I could... Yeah, it's not a comfortable feeling. Like it's a, you know, yeah, as I'm doing it, I kind of, yeah, I it's making me think, God, it's like I almost expend a lot of energy to try not to think about everything that's behind me that I can't see.
So now slowly, just, I'm doing this differently with you than I do with Pete, but just slowly just turn around and tell me the experience of that.
I'm turning around and yeah, well now, I'm looking out over this beautiful view of some mountains and a little town that formerly was completely a void. And now the void is behind me again, Connor.
It's completely evasive, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like, and also like, it's a sense of like, I mean, just probably because you have my imagination roaring right now. It's like a feline quality, like a thing so nimble and graceful that it just jumps behind me instantaneously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'll analyze that in a certain way. So you come back to this sort of initial place. Okay. So now, that's just one way to start getting into this, right? Is like, just notice the experience. Now here's the one that I love the most. I want you to just get in touch with the fact that you can't see your face.
Okay. Yeah.
So what's happening with your sight now that you know you can't see your face?
I wouldn't say like a change is happening to my sight, but somewhere in the imaginative overlays, I'm seeing like, I'm trying to understand what my experience of having a face is.
Mm-hmm. What is that?
Well, it's just realizing that one of the fundamental mechanisms I use to express to other people, I'm completely blind to. And that this whole time I've been producing a kind of proxy face that I haven't spent any amount of time considering at all. A sort of like, yeah, like a weird... Yeah, it's an energy form. And like, it seems like it's, yeah, it's making me see it as like a bundles of energy that I formerly didn't question at all. Thanks, Connor, for this. Now, I managed to not think about this. I think you may have mentioned it to me in a former podcast that I probably immediately just got drunk to not think about it.
Totally. That's batting the mushroom way, because that is an immediate switch for psychedelic experience.
Yeah.
So anybody can do that at any moment.
Wow.
Now let's do another one. So we're doing very short versions of this, because we can do any one of these for hours. So now look ahead.
Okay.
Okay. Whatever's in front of you.
Yeah.
And I want you to ask yourself a question. Sorry to do this one to you. This one's fucked. Are you seeing space between things? In other words, is there depth in sight? Like, can you see, if there's a computer in front of you and a wall behind the computer or whatever, can you see that depth?
Yeah, I remember you did this to me once, Connor, and it fucked me up. Damn it. No, I mean, no, I no. I forgot about this on purpose.
What? I don't think I did this one with you, but maybe I did. So what are you seeing?
Well, now that we're messing around with my delicious non stuff, now that you've taken away that, it's just like color. We're looking at kind of a field of color. It's color. Mm-hmm. Varying degrees of color.
And let's go further than I even went with
people. Podcaster Duncan Trussell found curled in the fetal position of his studio
with his eyes torn out by forks. What is the color? What is color? What's happening there? How is that? How are you seeing that? How is that coming to you? What's happening there?
Well, it's nice. Like, I like it. I like color. So it's this, like, I'm looking at, you know, my Ableton where I'm recording this, and I'm seeing this nice shade of yellow with the waveform of our conversation appearing on it. That's brown, which I didn't just know. I didn't notice that until just now, that, oh yeah, it's brown. It's like a nice, but they've done it on per, you know, it's like they've chosen these colors. Mm-hmm. They go nicely with each other. And then I have my flashing modular synths and the, you know, it's very cool. It's very beautiful in here. What it is, it drives me crazy to think I have never spent any time considering it, what it is. Hmm. It's, well, I guess it's distinguished by where it stops.
Okay. Yeah. And if I'm looking at a wall right now that has green on it and white, right? So I'm trying to look at something, not the computer for myself. And I notice that when I look at the green and when I look at the white, and there's the place where each one of them stops, although that's a little confusing because they're also overlaid with what I would normally call shadow. So there's a blending of the colors slightly, or there's a bridge between them. But the green is giving something to me that the white doesn't, and vice versa.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. The color, let's just break out of this for a sec, okay? So the color is giving something to you, and has given something to you your entire life, which is an inner experience. Color has given that to you freely your entire life. And so when we look and we see that depth actually is not a sight process, it's a process. It's real, but it's not a product of sight. We see that there's a color against a color against a color. And so we're seeing infinite ways of giving unto us that have been there our entire life.
Ah, that's so lovely.
It's nice, right?
Ah, that's so cool. Connor, I love you, man. You're the best.
I love you too, man. And I think it's just like, if people would just do this for 5 minutes, like, not, you know, sorry, for whatever people's religious experiences are with mushrooms or LSD or whatever, who the fuck needs it? Like, this shit is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
So the compositional forces behind you and in front of you are different. That's crazy. Like, just start doing this stuff. Anyway, I love it. I know you were probably like, I love you. That's the episode. But I wanted to add that and also say I love you.
You are so great, man. You are great. You really are. Every time we talk, you have this leap forward in whatever you're doing out there. Please keep doing it. It's really cool. And everybody go subscribe to his Patreon immediately. Because we're just lucky folks like you are out there, man. And thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, buddy.
That was Connor Habib, everybody. Don't forget to join his Patreon. All the links you need to find it are going to be at DougAtrussell.com. Listen to his podcast, Against Everything. A tremendous thank you to our wonderful sponsors. Remember, when you support them, you support the DTFH. And happy Thanksgiving if you happen to be listening to this on Thanksgiving week. I love y'all, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Hare Krishna.